The European Union will grant Britain another delay to Brexit. That's according to a draft statement by the bloc's national leaders. May had dashed to Berlin and Paris Tuesday to ask Angela Merkel and Emmanuel Macron to allow Britain to put off its divorce. But the draft statement left the end date blank, pending a decision by the other 27 national leaders at an EU emergency summit on Wednesday.
Shares in Sony surged on Tuesday in Tokyo after a Reuters report that an activist fund was aiming for a second push for change in the Japanese company. Its stock closed up over 9% in Japan after surging more than 8% on Wall Street. Activist investor Daniel Loeb is targeting up to $1 billion to buy Sony shares.
Bitcoin doubtless attracted more believers thanks to last week's near 20% price surge. In China's state planner, it also has a powerful skeptic. The National Development and Reform Commission wants to ban mining of the digital currency and is putting it on a draft list of 450 activities to phase out as unsafe, wasteful, polluting, or out of keeping with laws and regulations. The move is subject to public consultation by May the 7th, but could come into effect soon after in a sign of growing government pressure on the sector in China.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's April the 10th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thanks for tuning in again this morning for another edition of The Opening Bell. And here we go with another business day getting underway. Lots of ground to cover today in the world of business. We'll hit the markets momentarily. A little bit later on in the morning, we'll have a conversation about the latest in immediate care. WGN's Bennett Wakenight has been talking with the president and CEO of Physicians Immediate Care, Stan Blaylock, and that'll be in our second segment this morning, about 5:38 for that this morning. A.J. LaTrace is here this morning as well, covering real estate development and preservation for Chicago Magazine. We'll have a conversation about how development is going and zoning is going in the city of Chicago. He's been writing about this. And coming up as well this morning, the latest news, traffic, weather, and sports as we move through this hour. So stay with us here on The Opening Bell. Let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, where futures are pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures are all up about a quarter of a percent this morning. As we look around the globe, in London, markets higher as well in Germany and in France. In Asia, the market day looks like it's going to end in the red for most places. The Nikkei off nearly 115 points, down nearly a half a percent. The Hang Seng lower. The Shanghai is just a little bit higher this morning. And crude oil is at $64.50 a barrel, which is up about 52 cents. Some stories as we begin this morning. The company Uber planning to sell $10 billion worth of the company in its initial public offering, or IPO. The company announced it will make the public registration of the offering tomorrow. It plans to set a valuation of the company between $90 and $100 billion. Those are some of the steps necessary before the company goes public, which should be in early May. It's planning on investor roadshow during the week of April 29th. Uber will trade on the New York Stock Exchange. Boeing shareholders are taking legal action against the company over the grounded Boeing 737 MAX airliner. The class action lawsuit demands damages for securities fraud violations. It cites $34 billion losses in company stock value in the weeks following the crash of the Ethiopian Airlines 737 MAX jet last month. The lawsuit accuses Boeing of putting profits and growth ahead of safety and honesty. The Ethiopian Airlines crash was the second deadly crash involving the 737 MAX in just a couple of months. 5 months, as a matter of fact, the 737 MAX has been grounded since that crash. And Johnson Publishing Company, a publisher of Ebony and Jet magazines, filing for bankruptcy liquidation in federal court. It announced the petition filed yesterday in bankruptcy court says that the company was caught in a tidal wave of marketplace changes and business issues, which, despite exhaustive efforts, could not be overcome. The company was founded in 1942 by John H. Johnson here in Chicago when he launched the Negro Digest with a $500 loan secured by his mother's furniture. Let's begin this morning with a conversation about real estate development and preservation in Chicago. Story taking front and center status this week as the city of Chicago sort of puts the brakes on big developments, most notably Lincoln Yards. A.J. LaTrace is here this morning. He is a real estate development and preservation writer for Chicago Magazine. A.J., good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
Were you surprised this week to see that the mayor and that this committee delayed its sort of slowed down its vote and slowed down its action on Lincoln Yards?
Absolutely. I think a lot of people were. You know, the conversation in Chicago is constantly this theme of the fix being in, and there's been such a dramatic shift in City Hall in the last several weeks from not only the elections, but the, you know, the scandals that have kind of shaken the core of the zoning and development arm of City Hall. But the latest news is, I'm not sure if you saw, is that Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot appears to be pretty resigned to the fact that the TIF vote today on the 78 in Lincoln Yards is likely to go through.
Yeah, and so that kind of brings us to what you've been writing about in Chicago Pattern, ChicagoPatterns.com and other places, the notion that we're sort of in this dystopia where these giant developments, massive developments, are sort of the wave of the future. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so, you know, I think the theme is, you know, is that it's not that we should fear what's happening. It's the fact that we're kind of getting to a point now where we're seeing vast swaths of riverfront property being planned and developed by a handful of developers. And I think the question that we should be asking as a public is, are developers and their architects really the right entities to be doing this job? When we think about urban planning duties being done by cities, you know, we think that maybe cities have or do this from a perspective of efficiency and integration, while developers may likely be planning from a perspective of a profit motive. So are these really the right entities to be doing this work? And then what does that mean for a future Chicago? And, you know, we're looking at some pretty substantial tracks. I mean, for example, with Lincoln Yards, you know, that's going to be 50 acres, likely more. The 78, this is the related Midwest one in the South Loop, that's 62 acres. So, you know, just between those two, those are really large expanses. But, you know, interestingly enough, they're also being done by the same architect, which is SOM.
You know, I think for anybody who knows Chicago history, we think of planning of cities and some of this development being done under the watchful eye of, let's say, Burnham, who has that vision of the future in place. If that's not happening, if we're not having that thoughtful planning, what are the dangers to all of us, to those of us who live here and have to deal with whatever the outcome is of this? Is it less of a functioning city? Is it urban sprawl? Is it some kind of ugly development?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the big unknown right now. You think about Daniel Burnham and the plan for Chicago and how intentional it was. And we have this grid that works very well. And then, you know, we have the Emerald Necklace on the outside edge of the city, or not the outside edge, but that kind of runs along the west side of the city. And that's the boulevard system and some of the great parks we have. And then even beyond that, you've got the bungalow belt. But, you know, what we're seeing with these mega developments is, you know, perhaps a deviation from the grid, a deviation from the existing communities that we know. And you think about what the city within a city meant back in the 60s, and, you know, it could be summed up by, say, Marina City, which is a couple of towers that had a bowling alley, some retail. And now we're talking about 50, 60-acre developments with upwards of 10,000 residences. For example, for the one. So I think the main fear and concern people have is these developments turning into these kind of imposing gated communities, if you will, these, you know, kind of large developments that are surrounded with skyscrapers on the outer ring and some park space on the inside, where it really does feel like it's its own community that isn't exactly planned or integrated into the existing city.
AJ, the size, back to Sterling Bay, the size and power of Sterling Bay and how it's grown over the years, it feels like a freight train sort of barreling down the tracks. How do residents who are concerned about some of these issues slow it down or even stop it if they want?
Yeah, you know, Sterling Bay it's been an incredible story in the last few years, how they've gone from renovating old warehouses and industrial buildings in the Fulton Market area to now growing to a scale of being, you know, one of the biggest developers in Chicago and potentially one of the biggest developers in the country. But, you know, Chicago is a political beast by nature, and, you know, the only real way that anything can be done is by putting pressure on elected leaders to make the decision. And in this case, this plan mostly falls in the turf of Second Ward Alderman Brian Hopkins. And the Alderman and Sterling Bay have made concessions over the months as well. I mean, listeners may remember or recall they were supposed to be a Live Nation concert venue and a soccer stadium for a minor league soccer team. But, you know, there were some fears about congestion, about there being too much, especially packing in not only just these attractions, but the idea of not maybe having a fully baked transit plan as well. So at this point, you know, if there's really much that can be done, it's hard to say. Likely not, but we'll find out here in the next few hours.
Right, and it also, you know, moving forward, it'll be interesting to see what the new mayor and some of the new city council members have to say about this. On the issue of the TIF part of the story, the tax increment financing, I have memory going back quite a way, and I don't remember very many positive stories about TIF districts at all. Why do we still have them?
It's, you know, it's just another economic tool in the tool chest for development in Chicago. And I think that's one of the big issues that residents have with this plan, is that, you know, the idea of tax increment financing, we're supposed to create these districts in order to attract investment and development to either a specific building, you know, like, say, for example, the Uptown Theater, which is this great white elephant on the far north side, or to attract investment to a whole area, a whole part of the city. And in the case of these mega developments, it's kind of gone this other way around, where, you know, these developers acquire these parcels, and especially in the case of Sterling Bay, and they spent 2 or 3 years acquiring these different sites along the North Branch. And then they come to the city and say, well, we'd like a TIF now to develop this. You know, we're bringing in this development, we're creating the value, so, you know, we'd like to be reimbursed for the infrastructure costs. And in the case of the North Branch TIF, I mean, what we're talking about is over $1 billion. And a lot of people are wondering if the public of the city is getting the best deal possible. And so far, the consensus from some aldermen, you know, critic aldermen to media, and even the Tribune just did an editorial, I believe, yesterday or a couple days ago, you know, said, we support the plan, but we're not sure if we're really getting the best deal on this TIF for the Lincoln Yards site. So, you know, in terms of rushing this through, especially considering when we do have a new mayor on the way, and we've had so much turmoil at City Hall. The whole thing just, you know, it kind of goes back to the trope of Chicago residents just always feeling the fix is in. You know, we think about the parking meter deal and some of these other big deals, and Chicago residents have become so disenchanted and jaded by the system, and people just immediately wonder if this is another deal that's going to leave the public on the hook for decades to come.
Yeah, and that's going to be the part we have to stay tuned for. AJ, we appreciate you being with us this morning. I know our conversation doesn't do justice to what you have written about it this week. We invite everybody to go look at it, Development and Dystopia in Chicago. We're going to link out to it as well, and we appreciate you being with us this morning.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
All right, AJ LaTrace, freelance reporter covering real estate development and preservation here in Chicago. The piece is at chicagopatterns.com. Again, Development and Dystopia in Chicago.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. Building Business Around Town, brought to you by Associated Bank, is our monthly series diving into the industries that help make Chicago's business scene world class. And this month, WGN's Bennett Wakenight visited Physicians Immediate Care in Rosemont, where President and CEO Stan Blaylock detail how the world of healthcare is moving in a brand new direction and how they're helping to lead it.
Stan, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Great to be here with you, Bennett.
So, the healthcare world. This is a large world that's constantly changing, and I think it's safe to say that it's evolved over the years,
right,
from the medical treatments for the doctors provide patients to information being at our fingertips. And that's a lot for patients and everyday people to be taking in. So tell us where Physicians Immediate Care kind of fits into that larger healthcare realm.
Sure. It's a great question. We're just a small piece, but an important piece, I think, of the solution to all the challenges going on in healthcare right now. Healthcare is kind of a scary thing when you think about it. Patients are challenged all the time on issues of cost, quality, access, where do I go for what I have? At Physicians Immediate Care, we handle times when a patient has an urgency, mm-hmm. but not an emergency. So they're hurt or they're really sick and they need to be seen quickly, but they might not be able to get in to see their primary care physician, and they really shouldn't go to an emergency room.
Right.
So we fill that important void, I think, in what's on with healthcare right now. So I always tell people, I think we're part of the solution as opposed to a lot of the problems that are going on in healthcare.
Sure, and I think that where that falls into that spectrum, that really wasn't always here. It always seemed like you have to make an appointment with your doctor or you're going to the ER.
That's
kind of this new emerging area where we're seeing in healthcare.
Very true. It's evolved very rapidly. It's from our perspective, patients nowadays value convenience. They value transparency. They need that access. We're open 7 days a week, you know, with extended hours, typically 8 to 8, Monday through Friday, 8 to 4, Saturdays and Sundays. And people can walk in or they can same-day self-schedule. So that's really convenient. And the other thing is we're very transparent about things like our wait times. I mean, there's no question now people understand sort of time is money.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really try to fit into their lifestyle in a very good environment. So we really try to handle that broad spectrum of needs in a very efficient fashion. A very important aspect of how we do it is this, which is with care from the heart. I think patients can choose or choose not to come to Physicians Immediate Care. We obviously want them to come and come back and be part of the community to serve them. The reality of it is they've got to have a great experience then. And the nice thing is on 5 stars, we're rated 4.5 out of 5 stars. So this is really important. It's part of our culture, and I can talk more about that if you'd like.
Yeah, please. Please go on. I mean, that experience with the internet age and communication being how it is these days, you'll know if you have a bad experience wherever that is, whether it's a restaurant or a doctor's appointment, and that's vital.
We will. We pay a lot of attention to social media. We do our best to be transparent. We make mistakes like every organization does. We respond to them, and we fix them, and we move on. But we never deviate from our purpose, which is remarkable care you can count on when and where you need it.
Yeah, and going back a little bit to that community side of everything where you say that's such an important part as well, you guys have a large community. You're based in Rockford. That's where this was founded. And now you have 40 locations across Illinois and Indiana.
That's right.
I mean, that's some pretty impressive growth. And that's a large community now that you have established here in the Midwest.
Yeah. The growth has been fantastic because that creates opportunity for our employees. And it does, we do view ourselves as community-based urgent care. So we partner with health systems. 23 of our 43 clinics are joint ventured with health systems, where the health systems have recognized they are in the community,
right,
that we're an important piece of that continuum of care that they can't always provide. So we have a great relationship with Amita Health here in Greater Chicagoland, where we're providing the urgent care offering to their patients. The other thing that we will do that perhaps others might not do is, after that patient, when we've seen them and we've hopefully take care of their illness or injury, if they need additional care with other healthcare providers, they need to get back and see their primary care physician, they need to be referred to a specialist, we do that for them. We actually have a centralized care coordination team that does that. Healthcare is a pretty scary thing. And we try to be both convenient, transparent, and welcoming to help our patients get to where they need to be and get better. The other way we embed ourselves in the community is with the employers. So a big slug of our business too is occupational medicine and workers' comp services. So, employers, they worry about the healthcare costs of their employees, but they also worry about if they get injured at work, mm-hmm. or if they need to do drug tests, pre-employment physicals. We have a comprehensive suite of services. So we have 12,000 plus employer clients in Illinois as well. So another way we sort of embed ourselves in the community.
Coming back a little bit to, you mentioned the partnerships. You mentioned the partnership with hospitals, which is vital as well. But also another one of the partnerships is with Associated Bank. It's been there over a number of years.
Yes.
So talk a little bit about how that's kind of helped in the journey of Physicians Immediate Care.
Well, I mean, they've been incredibly helpful on our growth path, as you might expect. And I did ask my CFO, I said, tell me, Matt, Associated has been a great partner on the treasury side, on the cash management side, and we have some complicated bank accounts enough to say the least. All of our joint ventures and partnerships and like, and they've just been a great partner. It actually predates me. I've been here 6+ years, and I think that relationship goes back 10+.
Sure, and let's dive a little bit into that as well with your experience. And you've run the gamut when it comes to the healthcare world. You've been big corporate side. You've been on the small, owning your own pharmaceutical services company. And now you're here at Physicians Immediate Care. So what are some of those challenges that you're able to identify in the healthcare world, and maybe some of those partners that have helped you move through those challenges along the way?
Well, the challenges in healthcare are always getting paid for the value you deliver. One of the challenges is just the reimbursement environment. We tend to basically, as a provider, need to do more services for the same or less.
Right.
That's the reality of the world we're in, and so we constantly are pushing the technology too, not just in communication with our patients, but how we run our business. Get the paper out. Obviously, everything's electronic. How we, can things as complicated as scheduling. When you have 700 plus employees, the scheduling can be a challenge when you're opening that. So applying that technology to be efficient and effective is really critical to our future success.
Yeah, and evolving with that, with the times, with the technology, with the scheduling of everything, where do you really see the healthcare world going? I mean, this is relatively new space when it comes to the healthcare spectrum of what patients are offered and what's most convenient to them. But where do you see Physicians Immediate Care going, the healthcare industry as a whole? What direction are we moving in?
Well, I like to think we're, in line as to where the growth is going, because I don't see patient demands going backwards. I mean, as we've discussed, I think patients expect the kind of service we're providing with that kind of retail component, that convenience component, that transparency component. I think the healthcare world needs to embrace that and move that way. People need to know the sort of outcomes they can expect when they go into a place like Physicians Immediate Care. They obviously can see the social media and those other aspects, but I think that if you're not faster, better, more affordable, like we like to say, faster because you can get in and out so quickly, better because we know that patients like the experience, and more affordable, you can be seen for something that might have otherwise gone to an ER for maybe a tenth the cost at one of our clinics. And as people start to pay for more and more of their own health care, as you know, with high deductible health plans and the like, I think it's driving toward things like, you know, immediate care, urgent care, and those sort of solutions.
So as you move forward right. with those partnerships, and especially with Associated Bank, how do you kind of see that partnership growing? How does that relationship evolve as the healthcare community and the industry evolves as well?
Right. Well, there's always needs for capital, right? So as you know, these 43 centers, and you know, we've sort of in size, I guess, tripled since I've been here. Every time we open a new center, there's a significant build-out cost, as you might expect. Real estate's very expensive in Chicagoland
sure.
and beyond. So it's capital needs. You know, it could be advice on the financial side as well. I think that that we, much like in that community presence, as we've talked about, we really want to be the community-based urgent care mm-hmm. Associates in the community, and our health system partners, they're in the community. We value that tremendously. We've been around for over 30 years. I think one of the things patients look for too is sort of not just the reputation, but that longevity. You know, they're committed to the community, and they're committed to the community for the long term. That's our philosophy.
Well, Stan, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and chat with us a little bit about physicians' immediate care.
It's my pleasure. It's great to be with you, Bennett.
That's Stan Blaylock, the president and CEO of Physicians Immediate Care in Rosemont. As part of our Building Business Around Town segment, we do that for you every month here on The Opening Bell with WGN's Bennett Wakenight. You can find more online, and including a video at WGNradio.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures pointing toward an opening, green opening this morning. Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures all higher by about 0.25%. Let's get an update now on agriculture and commodities. With that, here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. No big surprises in the monthly supply-demand report issued yesterday by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. The numbers pretty much in line with what traders were expecting. The July soy wheat contract down 5.25 cents, July corn up 0.5 cents a bushel, and July soybeans down 0.25 cents. Another area that we're watching, the blizzard conditions across much of the plain states could have an impact on planting time when it should be here. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for this Wednesday, April the 10th. The inflation rate for March comes out this morning. Economists see it increasing slightly. The experts forecasting the consumer price index will be at 1.8%, up from 1.5% in February. Also today, the minutes from the last meeting of the Federal Open Market Committee will be out. The Fed's policy arm will release minutes from the March meeting at 1 o'clock Chicago time. Policymakers expect to make no changes in interest rates this year. Also today, we'll get a look at the Treasury budget, and the EIA petroleum status report is due, and the Mortgage Bankers Association has mortgage applications data out. Also, earnings today from Delta Airlines and Bed Bath & Beyond.